So what are class capture the flag exercises? That is a screenshot of Banner Catch, an Apple Commodore game, not ours. But it makes me, when I think of capture the flag, that's what I think of. So basically, our course capture the flag or class capture the flag exercises are lightweight, very small scope capture the flag exercises. We could argue later whether they're really CTFs or not, but that's the word on the slide, so I'm going to use it. And students simultaneously play both offense and defense. It's hosted on Deter, which I'll talk about in a second if you don't know about that. And the one of the main goals here, in addition to sort of being educationally useful, is that there would be a really minimal barrier of entry for both students and teachers, which is something that has come up a lot. And of course, it is used in classes, so we want it to be able to be tied into lectures and the course material that is being covered in the security class. So what's the motivation? You guys all understand this, but generally, we still have to explain to people, often in education, that security isn't just a technical issue of writing code or making software better, or the theoretical issue about what can or can't be secure, but there's this adversarial component to security in the real world, that if we're not teaching our students about it, they're going to go out there and not think about security as something that's driven by another human being who's trying to break your system, or risk versus reward trade-offs, cost-benefit, that kind of thing. And of course, if you're just doing exercises on paper, lectures, and tests and things, very valuable, but not really giving you that feeling. You know, firefighters practice putting out fires by burning down houses in a safe and secure way. So we want to help students have that same experience. And Deter also has, if you're doing security education, a lot of great sort of hands-on, practical, solve this problem in a real environment exercise, but that's also not adversarial. So what we're trying to do here is to bring that adversarial experience into the classroom. So what Deter is an open, free-to-use research and education testbed. It's based on Emulab, which is from Utah. Deter is funded by Homeland Security and the National Science Foundation. And basically, the idea is it's this big, server farm with a bunch of reconfigurable networking hardware, file servers, and so on. And the front end can take in a topology with instructions for what kind of software to put on the nodes. And you save that as something called an experiment. And then you can swap it in. And the software goes out, allocates machines to you, sets up the networks, and then you have root level access to those nodes. And when you're done, they just go back into the pool. So the great thing about that is Deter was designed, or their goal is, they're focused on security. So there's some firewalls and protections and things like that. They're totally happy for you to run malicious software inside. That is the goal. And so it makes it really great for security exercises. Again, whether they're adversarial, whether they're not, and security research. So if you have a system and you don't have, 100 machines to build a LAN and you want to do work, that's exactly what Deter is for. So I'll plug it a little bit because it's really cool, but also because we used it for this. So how do we compare class capture the flags versus the traditional capture the flags? And these are some generalizations here, and I'm mostly talking about kind of the big guys, obviously not like Pico CTF. But in a typical CTF, it's sort of wide open. Anything goes, where whatever you want to do, however you can get it done, that's the thing. For class CTFs, we're really focusing on a particular problem, a particular technology, like it could be buffer overflows or SQL injection. It could be denial of service, that kind of thing. Maybe you could compose them, and we do that a little bit. But the idea is it's a really focused thing that ties into the pedagogy of a class, where the big CTFs are really expert level. We're focusing on beginners to intermediates, right? The babies, so to speak, who would be doing the SQL injection. And that's important because you might go and try your hand at the big CTF and just get completely blown out of the water because you've never done that before. Thank you. That's interesting. Get completely blown out of the water. it's not really that pedagogically useful to you. And maybe what you learn is, I'm terrible at this and I'm never doing it again. But that is not the goal of these. In terms of preparation, if you were going to put on your own big CTF, as you guys know, lots of time goes into it. Lots of hardware potentially, software writing, so on and so forth. For class CTFs, the sort of core infrastructure is provided as a part of what we've developed. And the software is written by the students in a few weeks. And then, of course, the event itself just takes 2 or more hours. You know, you could let it run as long as you wanted to let it run. But again, we're trying to keep it small. And because of that, while you've got this big investment in a big CTF, they only happen every so often. These things are really educational exercises, so you can run them iteratively pretty much whenever you want to. If the students had access, they could practice when they wanted to. You could run an exercise once and then run the same exercise a month later so students can improve their work. In terms of team pairing, again, I mentioned this, but students, groups of students play against each other in a one-on-one competition, and they're playing both blue and red. And then from an educational perspective, having that post-mortem is really important. So after the class goes through it, one of the things that the instructor would do is sit down with everybody and say, you know, what worked, what didn't, what did we learn, what didn't you get out of this experience? That's really important to us from an educational perspective. So any questions about any of this so far? There will be time for questions and stuff, of course, but okay. So I'll just talk about the 4 existing CCTFs that we have now. We have plans for some more ambitious ones, but it gives you an idea of the scope that we're talking about. So the first one is just called Secure Data, and it's a simple eavesdropping and cryptography lesson. So you're talking about crypto in your class. The blue team needs to build, I think it's 4 specific ciphers that the teacher says, you know, you need to build a cipher like A, B, C, and D, and some client server software. And the teacher provides messages to the students at the time of the competition. So nobody knows what they are ahead of time. The students send them across. And the red team's job is to capture the data. You know, they could build their own tools. They could use TCP dump or EtherCap or whatever that they want to use. And then their other challenge, of course, is to break that encryption and figure out what the messages are. And because scoring is a headache, and we've talked about, you know, the different algorithms and all of that, scoring for us is a much simpler affair, right? We want to say every message that you get through that they didn't crack, that's a point for blue. Every message that they did crack, that's a point for red. And since both teams are playing both sides, and I haven't actually clarified this with Yelena, but I assume that there's really 2 of these topologies and the groups just flip roles, right? You know, so maybe it's easier for blue, but both teams are playing both sides, right? So it should even out. The next one that we have developed is called Resilient Server, and it's essentially a simple denial of service situation. The blue team has to serve some static pages. They have a gateway and a server. They can monitor and filter based on what they're seeing. And the red team's job is to send legitimate traffic from one node. I assume there's some guarantee on how much data they have to, or how much legitimate traffic they have to generate. And then they can perform a denial of service with the other 2 nodes. So they can kind of try to hide what they're doing based on the legitimate traffic and so on. And scoring is basically all based on latency. So are the pages getting served in enough time or aren't they? And then the last 2 are protected server and secure server. So protected server takes the same topology, and the students have to write an online bank front end based on a particular API providing a certain set of functions. And of course, the red team is going to try to break, they have to provide legitimate traffic, but then they're also going to try to break into or get the front end to do weird things, right? And the scoring is based out of logging. So number of properly served requests versus number of requests that weren't proper. And then the secure server just is a twist on this and combines it with that denial of service. So it's an inherit exercise where they're given a buggy front end, and they also have these denial of service guarantees as part of the scoring. Any questions about that? Okay. So another thing that you all understand that we still in colleges and universities have to talk about is explaining to people why we're doing what we're doing. Again, security is adversarial, right? You all know that we need to be able to, students and people need to understand what's possible offensively to defend against it. And our CTFs really use widely available stuff. Like, this is not hardcore. We're not inventing things. None of our students are selling 0 days on the side, right? And using DeterLab kind of solves some institutional issues for us. So we had a security exercise where students were running a password cracker, and they got some extra credit the further down the list of passwords that they managed to get. Well, one enterprising student said, well, I'm going to run these password crackers on these servers at UCLA. And, of course, immediately we got a call from, you know, facilities, and they wanted to discipline this kid. And, like, look, that was stupid that he was doing that. But he was trying to crack the bogus password file we gave him. And it's part of a class. You know, if you do this stuff on Deter, your institution is going to probably be more likely to be okay with that. And then we also try to build some ethical elements into it. So talk about what it means to do offense ethically or what context that's okay. Students are playing both sides, and so it's sort of a unified experience. It's not just we're teaching you how to get better at destroying things or whatever, but you can kind of see it as a whole picture. And again, that postmortem analysis we feel like is important from an educational value perspective. So for students, they get that adversarial experience, they have a good time, they're solving these problems in a limited amount of time, which really makes them not just think about the technical knowledge that they know or that they can apply that knowledge, but really to make decisions and balance it at a higher level. And the cost for the students is really just a few weeks of coding. Ahead of time, we say, here's what you need to build, here's how it's going to work, and here's where you can run it. And then when the event comes, the rubber hits the road, and they put it all together. For teachers, it's great because it fills a unique niche. It's already out there. So for professors or instructors who don't have a lot of time, the framework to do the topology and the scoring and stuff like that is already written. And the students are the ones that are writing that vulnerable code. Setup and scoring is automated. And there's nothing to kick, right? Because DeterLab has it. So you don't need the hardware. You don't need to worry about it breaking. So for the teachers, you know, whatever in-class preparation you need to give to the students is a part of the cost for the teacher. For some schools, it probably wouldn't be a lot of preparation. For other schools, you might have to teach them more about how to use certain tools and how to build code securely. And then, of course, the postmortem. We have run these exercises, two each, in both 2013 and 2014, 3 to 5 groups of 3 to 5 students each, and we assigned the students to the groups manually to try to kind of generally balance the teams. So it wasn't like there was one rock star team and 4 teams that didn't know what they were doing. And within that team, we didn't necessarily care how contributions broke down as long as everybody was involved. So some students are going to have more skills than others, that's okay. Because we grade based on what did you complete of what you were assigned to do. Did you get those ciphers created? Did you have offense? Did you have defense? The scoring is obviously helpful for students to know how they're doing, and that's important, but we didn't want students to, you know, have that binary situation where, like, one group passes and the other group fails. In terms of other experiences, the first time around is pretty challenging for students. I think there's a lot to absorb, and one part of that is probably that we were doing the encryption exercise first, and so you have not only all the we're learning about CCTS, but also we're writing ciphers and we're trying to crack ciphers. One thing we added in 2014 was to do milestones, right? So it wasn't just, okay, go write this code, and in 3 weeks we'll come back to you and we'll have the event, but checking in with the students and saying, you know, does this work, does this work, does this work? And going forward, making sure that students are integrating everything ahead of time. So, you know, the components are all there, and then it comes to the CTF and nothing works together. So overall, it's been a success. Students liked it. In addition to that adversarial experience, it is practical knowledge because you're running on Linux servers, real networking. It's all, you know, real tools. So that's a value for students as well. And we are working on a number of different exercises, some DNS and routing and all the kinds of things you might expect. If you're interested or this piques your interest, you'd like to develop your own, you'd like to use this stuff, please talk to myself or Yelena. Check out Deter, because it's a really cool tool, and everybody's welcome. So any questions or comments?
What is the process for getting on Deter?
So you have to basically apply for an account as a PI or a somebody with some kind of institution or connection. I don't think it has to be a 2 or 4 year school or whatever, but basically if you're the first person starting your own group at Deter, you know, you have to go through some kind of approval process. And then your students or friends or people you're working with say, hey, you know, I want to join Zach's group, you know, please, here's my name and whatever, and then you get loaded in. And then there's a number of different sort of security levels from, you know, I have root access to everything in the group to I only have local access on a particular machine. There's also some education features that are built into Deter that Emulab doesn't have. So they're like throwaway student accounts that have more limited access and things like that. Does that answer?
Yeah. And tell me more about what it means to have spiked interest. How did that manifest itself?
That is a great question that I can't answer for you, and I don't mean to punt, but Yelena taught the classes. So I know that she felt that it was successful and a good experience and something that we're going forward on, but I couldn't put it in terms of metrics or evaluations, and that's clearly something that's missing from this, right? So on some of the standalone exercises we've done, we did concept inventories and things like that, but that hasn't been done yet for this work. It's ongoing.
Yeah, you said that the students write their own services. Are they trying to write bug-free services, or are they trying to deliberately put bugs?
No, they would be trying to write bug-free services. And in theory, you know, if you have a really great team, maybe they would write a service that the other team couldn't exploit. But so far, that hasn't happened. But yeah, they're supposed to be bug-free in the scenarios so far.
So I know a lot for us, one of the problems is these sort of challenges is making sure that they conform to some sort of spec. So I assume if you have, you know, or having the students author a client or a server or something like that, it has to conform to something like that. How do you make sure to, you know, how do you pre-establish this spec so the students know that, like, when this event starts, it will work in the bounds of Deter with however, whatever system you use to grade this and stuff like that?
So I think there's two parts of that. One is that integration thing that I mentioned. In the past, I don't think as an instructor, I don't want to speak for Yelena, but because she said, you know, we need to make sure that students integrate ahead of time, I think there's that aspect of, you know, going forward, if you're going to run these, you really want to make sure the software runs ahead of time and students tested it. Some of these, the services are, students aren't writing, like for the serving static pages. It's really about writing IP tables rules and doing monitoring and things like that. For the bank thing, they have to write code to support a certain set of features. And I think the answer to this question would be if it's supposed to support that set of features, but the logs demonstrate that the students didn't write it so that it was supporting those features, that would be a point for the red team. But finding the right balance of like a realistic and interesting scenario, but that can also be, you know, automatically scored and specified sufficiently is one of the challenges of writing this kind of thing. But because they're limited in scope for a class, it's easier than if you were trying to do that in a broader event. Any other questions? Thank you.